This is Barbara Ridenour with the Decatur Herald and Review, dated April 7th, 2017. We'll begin today's readings on the front page with Race Talk Voices Forward Thinking. Discussion examines race relations in Decatur. Kevin Reyna has not paid much attention to the discussions taking place about race relations until Thursday by attending an event at MacArthur High School in Decatur. Reyna, a sophomore at the school, came away from the 9th annual Conversation on Race with a changed outlook. "I wish more people would come to see how great something like this is," Reyna said. "I will probably come again next year. I try to look at people for what's inside of them." The event that encouraged ongoing and honest dialogue about race in the Decatur community concluded Civic Discourse Week for Millikan University. One of its organizers, along with the Decatur School District, Richland Community College, and Caring Black Men. It followed a student summit held last week focusing on the perspectives of students. Groups during the meeting discussed the lyrics of What's Going On, a 1971 song by Marvin Gaye, and Glory, a 2014 John Legend and Common song that was used at the time as the theme for the movie Selma. Using songs was intended to focus on what's happening in the world and showing it's still relevant, said Molly Berry, Director of Inclusion and Student Engagement at Millikan. "We broke down the song lyrics to ask what things should look like in the future," said Nick Perry, a sociology major at Millikan. "We want to know how to make change go forward. Donna Quia Luter, a Richland student, said consistency is important in expressing their views. "We need to stay consistent to let our voices be heard," Luter said. "Steps need to be taken to go forward as Decatur can be seen as going backward," said Ora Jelk, 72. "We need to figure out what we have to do so we gain momentum," Jelk said. "We have a lot of chains on us. I'm tired of chains and I want them off." Marty Watkins, who was a candidate for Decatur City Council, wanted to see more leaders of the community participating in the discussion, but those in attendance could make a difference. "Decatur wants to remain the same," Watkins said, "and we're the ones who can make that change." Part of the discussion focused on the need to listen, said Michael Dugan, a co-interim superintendent for Decatur Public Schools. "The power of Decatur Public Schools is in its diversity," Dugan said. "More people need to listen and to understand." Other students participating in the discussion talked about the need to continue the fight that has started. "Knowledge is a key part of being able to successfully do so," said Ngozi Onuora, an education professor at Millikan. "Having historical knowledge is truly important," Onuora said. "Learning to exist in a world with all kinds of people was important to Cordell Ingram, the principal at MacArthur." "We have to not promote hate of any kind," Ingram said. "That's really important." "Decatur has been ahead of the curve in discussing race relations," said Jeffrey Perkins, one of the Caring Black Men founders. "Another meeting about race relations in the community will be held from 2 to 5 p.m. Sunday, April 23rd, at MacArthur, with Onuora leading the discussion. Tour puts Decatur on the map for international business expansion. Trade Group explores Decatur. International business representatives got a crash course in Decatur's infrastructure and amenities this week during a tour aimed at promoting opportunities for growth. The group from the Chicago International Trade Commissioners Association spent 2 days learning about the Decatur economy and opportunities in the area for business development and expansion. "This is putting Decatur on the map for a lot of us," said Michael Capiello, who works in marketing and promotion for the Italian Trade Agency. "Coming to Decatur and seeing the rail infrastructure has left a big impression." Highlights for the foreign dignitaries' visit included tours of Archer Daniels Midland Company facilities, including its intermodal ramp that is part of the Midwest Inland Port, Mueller Water Products, T/CCI Manufacturing, and Millikan University, along with a stop at the Community Leaders Breakfast on Thursday. Capiello was among the visitors seeing Decatur for the first time. Among other insights, he came away with a better appreciation for the size of the Norfolk Southern Corporation rail yard. "This is something we can show Italian companies in the future," Capiello said. "Companies exploring opportunities to invest in the U.S. could find a home in Decatur," said Ryan McCready, Economic Development Corporation of Decatur and Macon County president. A similar tour was held for a group from Chicago consulate offices last fall. He said the tours allow an opportunity to reach up to 70 countries that have offices in Chicago. Representatives from Ecuador, Bulgaria, Spain, Pakistan, Korea, Italy, Hong Kong, Argentina, Hungary, Mexico, South Africa, Haiti, and the Philippines took part in this week's visit. "This can be helpful to make those connections," McCready said. "Many of them work in Chicago and live in the city and have no idea what's going on in Decatur." The group heard from Illinois Governor Bruce Rauner, who appeared earlier in the day at the Community Leaders Breakfast. Rauner seemed interested in focusing on bringing more companies to Decatur, said Jessica Jung, a representative from Korea. She said companies are looking to expand internationally. "That's what we're looking to do," Jung said. "We want to talk about the future of manufacturing and go back to see what might be a match." Trade representatives could all be part of creating partnerships to benefit students interested in Millikan's performance learning focus, said Patrick White, the university's president. Business students have been working with officials from Ecuador on developing market research, said Najiba Benibes, dean of Millikan's Tabor School of Business. "It was really eye-opening for the students," Benibes said. "The school would like for companies to provide opportunities for its students. Businesses are our laboratory," she said. "Students can apply what they're learning in the classroom. Employers want their students already trained." "The job market is always changing," Benibes said, pointing to the 1980s as a time of growth and the 1990s as an era of technology. She said the current era remains undefined, suggesting it could be considered an era of collaboration. "Businesses don't have time to reinvent the wheel. So instead," Benibes said, "they're looking for more chances to work together and share resources." Rauner touts Decatur's potential. As he stood in front of hundreds of leaders in the Decatur community, Governor Bruce Rauner repeated one of his favorite sentiments when he visits the city. "We have every reason to have a booming economy here in Decatur," Rauner said. "I came over here from Springfield to talk about the changes we need to make sure we're competitive here in Decatur and across Illinois." The governor was a surprise guest Thursday morning at the annual Community Leaders Breakfast at the Decatur Conference Center and Hotel. More than 500 Decatur-area business leaders enjoyed remarks from Herald and Review executive editor Chris Coates and Ohio-based motivational humorist Kay Francis. The governor touted Decatur's central location, the Midwest inland port, and its workforce as assets that can help the city succeed. But to get there, Rauner listed a number of proposals that he has spent years touting as the state approaches nearly 2 years without a budget. Among those are a property tax freeze, term limits for all state lawmakers, and pension reform. During a post-breakfast interview, Rauner repeatedly praised a plan from Senate Republicans that would address these concerns, and he dismissed any plan to approve another stopgap budget. "It is a very good plan, and I hope the legislators will call the Senate Republican plan so we can have a balanced budget," he said. Rauner also met members of the Chicago International Trade Commissioners Association, who were at the breakfast as part of a two-day tour of the area. Other speakers at the breakfast included Coates, who stressed the importance of vigilant community journalism, A good community newspaper is like an honest friend, he said. It's supportive and candid about the problems, direct but fair. It doesn't waste your time, and it wants you to succeed. Frances spent most of her nearly hour-long speech using humor to reinforce her message about the importance of laughter to relieve stress and taking care of one's mental well-being. Self-care is not selfish, she said. Decatur Township OK Spending Plan. Sparks fly as Decatur Township approves tentative budget. After a contentious meeting, the Decatur Township approved a $2.34 million budget for the coming fiscal year. The budget outlined Wednesday would be down from the current year's $2.5 million budget, with the majority of cuts coming from the assessor's office. With its approval, the tentative budget must now be displayed for 30 days before the board must vote to ratify it. Nearly half of Wednesday night's two-hour meeting was occupied by the third tumultuous argument in the past month between Assessor Vicki Sheets and Trustee Tom Grianius, who served as assessor from 2009 to 2013. Sheets had presented a budget of $417,700 to the board, a reduction of more than $2,000 from the current budget. The proposed budget was the same she presented to the board at its March meeting, with the exception of $45,000 for Illinois Municipal Retirement Fund, Medicare, and FICA being moved to their own separate line items at the request of an auditor. But the board shot down Sheets' proposal by a 3-2 vote, with Trustee Michael Smith and Supervisor Lisa Stanley joining Grianius as no votes. Smith said he had no problem with the cuts that would require layoffs, while Stanley defended her vote by saying she wants a better description of Sheets' purchases. Sheets also accused members of the board of micromanaging her and making things personal when asking Stanley to clarify spending in the General Assistance Fund. As during the last two budget discussions, Grianius suggested the board cut the assessor's budget to $305,276, a reduction of $112,414 from Sheets' original proposal. The plan would require Sheets to lay off two employees and move $100,000 to the township's contingencies line item. If Sheets needs to make future purchases for her office, Grianius said she would have to come to the board for approval. I'm not trying to keep her down to a bare minimum, but I think we need more control beforehand, Grianius said. Under the plan, Sheets would have been the lone department head required to ask the board for additional money to operate their office. Trustee Amy Roof suggested Grianius's plan was an attempt to micromanage the assessor's office and undermined the board's duty to work with the department heads on a budget and not to force one upon them. Eventually, the board approved an amended budget for the assessor of $389,300, a reduction of $28,400 from what Sheets had originally requested, and just under $31,000 less than her current budget. No layoffs would be necessary with the change, though Sheets will be required to ask for money in, she wants to continue. If she wants to continue having outreach events or use computer services. She said the cuts were personal for Grianius, adding that she was disappointing board members would support the cuts. Grianius denied the cuts being anything more than being fiscally responsible, though he did get visibly upset when she said she was sick of being personally attacked. "And I get sick of your whining," he told her. The rest of the budget discussions went smoothly, as the board approved budgets for the cemetery, general assistance, and general town fund, and heard Highway Commissioner Gary Brennan present his $138,446 budget. It's possible Wednesday night's meeting is a preview of things to come for the township, as Sheets easily won re-election on Tuesday night, while Roof, Smith, and Grianius all won new four-year terms as trustees. Stanley was unopposed in her bid for re-election. St. Patrick students learn about wind power. Boats navigate stream. If your sailboat isn't moving fast enough to suit you, try blowing on the sails. It seemed to work for preschool students at St. Patrick's School. Students rested the sailboats, sail cars, wind jammers, and land yachts they built during a week of STREAM study, science, technology, religion, engineering, art, and math. Principal Jan Sweet said, "This is the third year the school has focused on STREAM, guided by Brad Christensen of Illinois State University." Dr. Christensen supervises the STEM projects at ISU, Sweet said. We have a co-op program with him. The kids have a week of construction, and today they logged their races and can check their time. We've gone outside already to have the natural wind, and we have the electric fans for artificial wind, so we have done both. The boat project, dubbed Land Yachts, was funded by an ADM CARES grant. Students built their projects based on specific instructions, but leaving some room for creativity as well. The preschool students used instructions that were mostly pictures and were for more simple boats. The older students had more complicated instructions and designs. You can see all their boats are a little bit different, Christensen said with a smile, watching the preschool students race their boats in the St. Patrick Church basement. They used electric fans in place of wind and aluminum gutters filled with water for the raceway. Older students built sail cars, wind jammers, and land yachts, all with wheels. I learned it's not always going to come out perfect for the first time, said eighth grader Anna Hainline. You're going to have to make changes. Christensen said that what he hoped the kids would take away from the project is, no design is perfect, he said. They can all be improved. Even the smallest preschool students learned to measure with a ruler and figure out how fast their little boats would go, though the races weren't really the important part of the project, Christensen said. That was just something for the kids' enjoyment. The religion component came when Christensen asked the kids to think about how many times boats are mentioned in the Bible. Most of the kids immediately thought about Noah's Ark. Some remembered the story of Jonah, and the older kids talked about Jesus calming the storm on the Sea of Galilee. We were looking for ways that the students could do something that would be wind-powered, Christensen said of the project's goals. What could preschoolers do? What could grades 2 and 3 be able to do? Once we got that set up, they could do some math with it, and they could do some science with it, and then we end up with this. The race is the highlight, but it's not really the point. Of course, the children think it is. Billionaire businessman Pritzker announces bid for governor. Chicago. Billionaire J.B. Pritzker touted his business record and progressive values Thursday as he kicked off his campaign for Illinois governor, raising the financial stakes in what was already expected to be a costly and competitive fight to unseat Republican Governor Bruce Rauner. Pritzker wasted little time in blasting the venture capitalist-turned-governor, even comparing him to President Donald Trump. Rauner has been at odds with the Democratic-controlled legislature since he took office. Governor Rauner talks about what he might have done or what he might get, what he tried to get done. It's past time for all of his talk. It's time for action, Pritzker told the crowd of union officials and community leaders gathered at a park facility in a predominantly African-American neighborhood on the city's south side. Everything we care about is under siege by Donald Trump and Bruce Rauner. Pritzker joins a growing field of Democrats who've said they'll all seek their party's nomination in the March gubernatorial primary, including Senator Daniel Bliss, Chicago Alderman Amaya Power, and businessman Chris Kennedy, who is the nephew of former President John F. Kennedy. Last month, Kennedy donated $250,100 to his own campaign, a move that, under Illinois campaign finance law, lifted the caps on campaign contributions for all candidates. His campaign says he raised another $1 million from some 300,000 donors in the first 6 weeks of his candidacy. Biss and Power already have made wealth an issue in the campaign, telling voters that millionaires and billionaires shouldn't have a lock on political power. I welcome the debate about whether the future of the Democratic Party will be a vehicle for the very rich and machine politicians or one of the rest of us, Biss said Thursday in a statement. An heir to the Hyatt Hotel's fortune, Pritzker was recently ranked by Forbes magazine as the third wealthiest person in Illinois, with an estimated net worth of about $3.4 billion. That easily makes him the wealthiest person running, though Rauner, a multimillionaire who put $50 million into his own campaign fund late last year, also has received millions in campaign contributions from Illinois' richest person, businessman Ken Griffin. Pritzker, 52, acknowledged his own wealth and opportunity. He said his first job was washing sheets in his parents' hotels, and that his mother raised him with an abiding sense of social justice. I wake up every morning knowing that I need to work hard to earn what I've been given, he said. He added that Illinois is losing jobs and opportunities because of inaction by Rauner, and the state needs to first tax its millionaires and billionaires before the middle class. Rauner's 2014 race against Democratic Governor Pat Quinn set a record for spending in Illinois, topping $100 million. Illinois Republican Party spokesman Stephen Yaffe, who has served as a campaign spokesperson for Rauner, said Thursday that Pritzker's loyalty belongs to Mike Madigan, referring to the longtime Illinois House Speaker whom Rauner blames for most of the state's problems. Pritzker, whose full name is Jay Robert, is the founder of Pritzker's Group, a venture capitalist firm that focuses heavily on technology, the technology sector. He also founded 1871, a Chicago hub for tech startups. He previously served as chairman of the Illinois Human Rights Commission, and he is a vocal advocate for early childhood education, a cause to which he and his wife have donated significant amounts of money. His sister, Penny Pritzker, served as commerce secretary under former President Barack Obama. In crime and courts, parolee, relative of accused of assaulting pregnant woman, Decatur. Terrence K. Thomas, a 25-year-old Decatur parolee, is facing a felony charge of aggravated battery after he and a 31-year-old female relative allegedly punched a pregnant woman, clawed her face, bit her, and threatened to kill her baby, police said. The 22-year-old victim told police that Thomas and the woman confronted her at a residence March 20th in the 900 block of South Moffett Street. The victim said the woman threw her to the ground and began striking and clawing at her face with her nails, said an affidavit by Decatur Police Detective Timothy Whitmer. The woman also bit her on the arm, the victim told police. During the attack, the woman screamed at the victim that she was going to stomp this baby out of you. After the victim escaped from the female assailant, Terrence then struck her repeatedly in the face with a closed fist, according to the affidavit. The victim's account was corroborated by an eyewitness. Whitmer wrote in the affidavit, Patrol Officer Derek Oakley observed injuries consistent with her statement. The victim told police that both suspects were aware that she was pregnant at the time of the incident. She said she was familiar with both of them and positively identified them from photographs. The woman who allegedly attacked the victim is being sought by the police. Thomas, who is listed as 6 feet tall, weighing 236 pounds on the Illinois Department of Corrections website, was released from prison on parole June 3rd after serving 4 years of an 8-year sentence for a conviction of attempted armed robbery with a firearm. In that case, Thomas was originally charged with Class X home invasion and 5 other felony charges for breaking into the northwest side home of a 34-year-old woman and her teenage son and threatening them with a rifle on June 5th, 2012. Thomas and his accomplices all wore masks as they terrorized the family, which had no money to give them. They were all on parole at the time of that incident and all returned to prison for 8-year terms. Produce stand crash leads to DUI charges. Decatur. The driver who allegedly crashed into a produce stand shed Monday, sending an employee flying into a utility pole guide wire, was booked into the Macon County Jail on preliminary drug charges and arraigned on additional charges. Joshua R. Diebolt, 27, was driving a pickup truck about 2:30 p.m. Monday when he lost control of the vehicle while driving west on Pershing Road. The truck crossed the raised median and two lanes of oncoming traffic and demolished a wooden shed of Martin's Produce, 985 West Pershing Road. Bradley Bullock, 34, was lifted into the air, crashed into a cable about 40 feet away, and was transported to a hospital with injuries including a broken bone, lower back injury, and road rash. DeBolt, who was detained on the scene by the business owner until police arrived, was transported to a hospital to be tested in for driving under the influence. DeBolt was sweaty with glassy eyes, had slurred speech, and could not walk without assistance, said an affidavit by Decatur parole officer Carl McComb. Testing at the hospital showed that DeBolt had cannabis in his urine, an e-cigarette in his possession, had an odor of cannabis on it. He was held in jail on charges of aggravated driving under the influence slash accident causing bodily harm, driving under the influence of a drug, and possession of drug paraphernalia. He was arraigned on the DUI charge and traffic charges of failure to reduce speed and operating an uninsured motor vehicle. Bolt, who was released from jail after posting a $1,000 cash bail, is due in court on May 5th. On the money page, House approves stopgap budget plan. Springfield. The Illinois House voted Thursday to tap $817 million in accumulated but unallocated revenue to temporarily relieve struggling universities and human services. A 64-45 vote largely represented a largely partisan roll call, with minority Republicans saying that another temporary spending plan amid the nation's longest state budget stalemate since World War II would actually hurt long-term efforts. The vote ended a two-hour debate over just a small amount of funding in a plan that the Senate can't even consider until the General Assembly returns from a two-week spring break. Even then, its chances don't look good because Republican Bruce Rauner says he opposes it. Representative Greg Harris of Chicago, the Democrats' point on budget matters, proposed taking money generated by income tax returns that's funneled into special accounts for education and human services. It can't be spent without legislative authorization. There's money sitting around, sitting in bank accounts being unspent, said Representative Will Guzzardi, a Chicago Democrat. If we let this bill die, we're saying we just want this money to keep accumulating in a pile under our agency while our agencies suffer. In all, $559 million would go to the state's cash-starved universities, one of the hardest-hit areas of state finance in the 2 years since Rauner and Democratic leaders of the General Assembly began a stalemate over an annual spending plan. Another $258 million would go to human services that have not been funded by court orders, including domestic violence programs that haven't received any money for a year, immigrant risk services, research into sickle cell anemia, autism and epilepsy programs, and in-home care for seniors who would otherwise have to be institutionalized. Republicans argued that approval immigrant services, sickle cell anemia, autism and epilepsy programs, and in-home care for seniors who would otherwise have to be institutionalized. Republicans argued that approval relieves the pressure on lawmakers to find a permanent solution while debts grow. You can go home and feel good about this vote, said GOP floor leader Representative Steve Anderson of Geneva, but think about the people you're leaving out, because you're leaving out a lot. Anderson ticked off $10 million in proposed spending that would go to organizations that have closed, are ineligible to receive funding because of rules violations, or spend what he said is an exorbitant amount for the results of it produces. Meanwhile, the state's two high schools in Jacksonville for the deaf and visually impaired get nothing. Rauner preempted Thursday's vote with a campaign-like video released Wednesday. That's all we have time for the first half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review, dated April 7th, 2017. This is Barbara Ridenour. Please stay tuned.